and welcome to From the Mezzanine. I'm your host, Lindsay Stone. From the Mezzanine is the Broadway podcast for the Broadway fans. On From the Mezzanine, we talk about Broadway news, Broadway grosses, and let's be honest, all of the gossip and tea that happens week to week in the Broadway stratosphere. What is up, everybody? How are you doing? Holy cannoli, do we have so much to catch up on. Where do I begin? Aaron Tveit is Sweeney, and I have seen him and witnessed him with my own eyes. I have seen Merrily We Roll Along. The Wicked trailer came out last week at the Super Bowl and stunned us all. I tried to keep my cool at the Super Bowl party that I was at that was not with Broadway people, but I couldn't contain myself. I was freaking out, and I appreciate all of you guys for messaging me on Instagram and checking in and making sure that I was okay, because I was like sitting there. I was like, this is not happening right now. This is not happening right now. We haven't had a morsel of anything about Wicked, about the Wicked movie. We haven't seen a show poster. We haven't seen them in costumes other than like drones flying over the set. We haven't gotten anything until the Super Bowl. And we got a lot. And that is going to be our first news story. So before we get there, we have to catch up, everybody. Because like I said, I saw Aaron Tveit in Sweeney Todd. And I have my playbill right here if you're watching on YouTube. Shout out my YouTube channel if you want to go subscribe. It's From the Mezzanine, a Broadway podcast. And you can catch the podcast in a visual format. See my lovely face, and as well as my props, which right now is my Sweeney Todd playbill. If you're watching this on YouTube, you may notice there is a signature atop that playbill. And it is Aaron Tveit's signature, people. I don't know where to begin. Okay, first off, let's talk about the day. We rushed it. We got there at 7:45 a.m. I live in Brooklyn, so we had to get up early. It was a snowy, snowy, cold weekend. But you know what? Anything for Aaron. Anything for Aaron. We got there with about 2.5 hours until the box office opened. We were third in line, my sister and I. And we staked out. I got a picnic blanket that I am now going to be using for my rushing that we sat on. And we bundled up, tried to watch some Netflix. We froze every single part of our body, and then finally we get in there, and what did they say other than no $49 rush? I'm sorry, what? Lentfontein Theater? I'm sorry, what, Sweeney Todd? No $49 rush for all these people? The line grew so long behind us. It was probably, I want to say like anywhere from like 30 to 35 people behind us. It was a long, long rush line. Very reminiscent of the last week of Gutenberg. And I was surprised to see that, because the last time I rushed Sweeney, I got there 30 minutes before the box office opened and we secured tickets. So to get in there and have waited so long and for them to say no $49 rush when my sister flew in specifically to see Aaron Tveit and Sweeney. Yeah, that was a bit of a shock. But it was okay, because it was remedied, because they were selling the accessible seating. So they don't sell that seating until day of, and when they do sell it, they'll sell it at a discount. And he was technically calling it rush seats. And so we got $79 accessible seating rush seats. So that was interesting. We bought them. We snatched them up. Luckily, we got some sort of discounted ticket. I can't assume that many people behind us got that opportunity. So I was very lucky with that, but still, that was nearly double what we were planning on paying. But once again, let me reiterate, anything for Aaron. So we got those tickets and we were ready. Okay, I was so excited leading up to this, as you can imagine. So much hype has been put behind this casting of Aaron Tveit and Sutton Foster, and I know a lot of people are really interested in Joe Locke, who was in Heartstopper. He is now Tobias. And so there was just a lot of excitement in the theater that night, and I knew I was going to like Aaron. And here's what I said going into it. I said, I think he's going to out-act Josh Groban. I think Josh Groban was a great Sweeney. However, he was somewhat one-dimensional. He didn't have a very layered character. It was just rough and gruff and angry Sweeney kind of the whole time. But it was good. Like, I don't want to, like, discredit his performance. I do think he was an excellent Sweeney. And when you match it with that voice, you're scared of him. And he's good. But I knew Aaron would bring a couple more layers, and I knew he would out-act Josh. Of course, we were all curious how he was going to sing. I heard that people were saying he took one song up half an octave. We talked about that last week. I didn't really care that much. Didn't turn me off from it. And so I was right in my hypothesis. Aaron Tveit brought so many layers to Sweeney Todd. He made him funny at times. He made him likable. I don't think Josh Groban Sweeney was ever very likable, in my opinion. You liked him as, ooh, good, scary Sweeney. But, like, he weren't like, I, like, kind of see where he's coming from with all of this anger and wanting to kill everybody. Like, he made him funny. He made him personable. He made him scary, which was so crazy to see. I was like, how is perfect Christian from Moulin Rouge about to go be Sweeney? How am I going to change that in my head? Well, makeup is one thing. They make him super duper pale with deep sunken eyes. He did a, I don't know if it's a Cockney accent necessarily. It was just kind of like a rugged British accent, which I really, really liked. I don't recall that Josh did a British accent. I don't think that he did. So I really liked that Aaron did that. Oi! Oi, oi, love it. What's in that shop up there? There was a barber and his wife, and she was beautiful. Anyways, I really like that he did an accent. He was good. He was. I have really honestly have absolutely no critiques for his performance. Our seats were a little bit towards the rear of the orchestra, so I think I would have enjoyed it obviously even more if I could have been closer, but nevertheless, I don't think it was going to happen. I don't remember how much the tickets were going to be, but it was what it was, and it wasn't bad at all. But I can only imagine if I had been closer, I would have been even more impressed with his performance. But I thought he was honestly flawless, and I know that doesn't come as a shock to any of you guys, but go see Aaron Tveit if you're an Aaron stan. You're going to love him in Sweeney. You see a different side of him that you've never, ever seen before. Dark, menacing, kind of funny at times. A murderer. Like, it was crazy. In Epiphany, when the epiphany happens and Sweeney turns a switch and he is like, you, sir, you want to shave? You, sir, how about a shave? And he's like going crazy. That was so, like, my jaw was on the floor. I was shook to my core. It was insane. He just was so, so good. I was really, really, really pleased. Let's talk about Sutton. Now, I know, y'all know, that I wasn't necessarily super psyched about Sutton. However, I don't know what it was. I saw some of the videos from her Once Upon a Mattress performance, and I thought she looked really, really good. So I was like, okay, I can kind of see her as Lovett. And slowly but surely, my perception of her changed, and I started to believe, I think she's going to be really, really good. And she was good, guys. She was good. She was fine. The people I was with said that they really, really liked her. I was like, she was good. She was fine. I love Danielle Ashford. I love how much comedy she brought to the role, which I think some people were like, she's acting like a clown on stage. No, 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 no. Actually, I take that back. I don't want that rhetoric spread on my podcast. She was so funny. She was so good. She's so talented. She was such a light and a shining star on that stage of dark, scary Sweeney Todd. And so I really loved Annalie for those reasons. And Sutton just didn't have that same Annalie sparkle that I liked. She was good. She was fine. Just wasn't blowing me out of the water. And here's what I kind of like think why that is. So Josh Groban, like I said, was underacting. He was kind of one-dimensional. So I feel like Annalie went over the moon, not to compensate for him, but just like her charisma and like stage presence outshined Josh so heavily that she became the star. I think Aaron and Sutton, I hesitate saying this, but I think they kind of have probably a similar stage presence. Obviously, I gravitate towards Aaron, but I think they're pretty well matched that then Sutton as Nellie Leavitt isn't outshining anything because I guess they are well matched. And where you could say that's a perfect pairing, I still say I would have loved to see Aaron and Anna Lee because I know that they have chemistry. I know that they've performed together before and I just know that they would be flawless. I know they would be so good. And so I do hesitate to say that without Josh's intense darkness, maybe Anna Lee would, like, it would be too much of a chipper musical at the end of the day, but I still think it would be really, really good and stay true to Sweeney Todd. So anyways, I thought it was good. Don't get me wrong. Sutton was fine. Just not like her performance won't stick with me. I do want to say we did have the understudy for Anthony and he was unreal. Let me find his name in the playbill real quick. His name was Felix Torres Ponce. I thought he was amazing. I think he might be my favorite Anthony that I have seen yet, including Jordan Fisher. I really, really, really liked him. But yeah, Sweeney, as good as ever. The show is just amazing. It's so in your face and it rocks you to your core. And I'll always be happy I saw it. Then it was stage door time. We got out there so quick because like I told y'all last week, Aaron Tveit rushes to that stage door and he typically, in my history of seeing him at Moulin Rouge, runs to his car immediately. I don't always need a signature. I just want to see them up close after the show. So that was what I was planning on happening. Like I didn't think that he was actually going to sign. But no, Sutton came out. She didn't sign. She went to her car. Aaron came out and he signed everybody's playbills. He took selfies with people, which if I would have known he took selfies with people, I would have done that. But I had no idea that he would have taken a selfie. But maybe I'll go back just to get a selfie. Anyways, he signed my playbill, which was just crazy. I can't believe I have Aaron Tveit's signature. And that was our night at Sweeney Todd. Moving on to Merrily We Roll Along, guys. This was a show I never thought that I would see. I accepted my fate that I wouldn't be able to afford to go and see it, but my sister really wanted to see it, and we found some pretty reasonably priced tickets, and so we snatched them up, and I saw this just last night. And it's always hard to think about where you begin. I'm going to start out with the shining star, which was none other than Daniel Radcliffe. I completely underestimated him. Completely. I thought, oh, he's a Hollywood actor. Of course, he's going to be good. I didn't think he was going to be the star of my show. I loved Daniel Radcliffe. He was so endearing. He played his character so well. His American accent was perfect. His vocals were great. He was his character. He really was believable. He was amazing. And for me, he was my Tony Award winner of this cast. He was unreal. And I just didn't expect that going into it. I grew up watching Harry Potter. I, of course, knew he was a good child actor. And he's done like some obscure films here and there. And yes, he's been on Broadway before, but I totally underestimated him. So my apologies, Daniel Radcliffe. I get it. You're amazing. And I'm so happy that you are. Seeing Jonathan Groff was what I was most excited for. And I do think that he was amazing. I do want to see him in another role where I feel like his star can shine a little bit brighter. He was the lead of this show by a hair. I mean, it's really a ensemble piece with Lindsay Mendez and Daniel Radcliffe and Jonathan Groff, but the story is a little more centered around Frank, the character that Jonathan Groff plays. And so his character, here's what I say sometimes that is a flaw in some shows, is that sometimes your leading actor is a vessel for the story and for the ensemble around them. And I somewhat felt like Jonathan Groff's character, Frank, was that sort of leading man. He doesn't have a whole lot of personality himself. He basically is narrating the things happening around him and everybody's focusing on him, whereas the audience doesn't have a personal bond to him. I feel like maybe if you're an actor, you might understand this sometimes. It's just like sometimes the ensemble or the supporting actors have more well-rounded characters, whereas your leading actor is just moving the plot forward. And that's kind of how this show felt to me. I don't want to get it twisted. Jonathan Groff was very good. I did feel like I struggled to hear him at times. It felt like his microphone was a little bit down. Plus, we were near the back of the theater. But still, that shouldn't be a reason for me to miss some of his lines. And I did miss quite a few of his lines. And plus, this wasn't like he didn't have a big solo song. Daniel Radcliffe did, which was an amazing song. If you've seen it, you know, mutter, mutter, mutter. And now we're humming along. That was my favorite song, I think, in the whole show, which I believe it was like the second or third song. And so it was like an immediate high. It was so good. Anyways, I would have liked to see a little more shine from Jonathan Groff, but it's okay. I think it was good. I really thought Lindsay Mendez sat in her character so well. She also, similarly to Daniel, just embodied them, and she played Mary, who was just one of the friends. And she goes through a lot in this show. She definitely has a character arc. And something about Merrily We Roll Along, I guess I should give you a bit of a synopsis if you're unaware, because I was pretty unaware of what the show was about going into it. I had listened to the cast album once before, but that was it. So basically, it follows these three friends, and it's going from the end. The show starts at the end of their friendship, and with every scene, it's getting to the very beginning of their friendship, kind of like the last 5 years, if I can compare it to that. It's going in reverse of their friendship. So there are certain Easter eggs that you hear early on that are explained later. And so it's really cool to put all those puzzle pieces together while you're watching the show play out. And the leading actor, the leading character, Frankie, who is played by Jonathan Groff, he is a like lyricist and composer duo with Daniel Radcliffe's character, Charlie. And then Lindsay Mendez as Mary, she's a book writer, and they're all just good old friends, and they've been friends for decades. And so it's really sad at times because you're seeing these friends start out as just broken pieces. And as the show moves forward, you see how they used to be so close. So it's sad, it's bittersweet, but it's also a really, really interesting story. And also one of the biggest standouts in this show was the ensemble. I stand by this Tony Awards. If you are listening to From the Mezzanine right now, we need to have an award for the ensemble. There needs to be a best ensemble award, because if I could give it to anybody, it would definitely go to Merrily We Roll Along. But every year, I'm like, how are there only best actor and best featured actor or supporting actor? There needs to be an ensemble award, because this ensemble, if you've seen it, you know the Blob song. That was so fun. The girl who plays Gussie, I loved her. Crystal Joy Brown. Oh, she was Eliza in Hamilton. I had no idea. She was outstanding. I loved her. But all in all, I can see the hype with Merrily. I kind of wondered if I would see the hype, but in the end, yes, it was an excellent show. The music was great. It told such an interesting story, and a story a lot of us can relate to, about our oldest friends and the trials you go through to maintain those friendships, and how it's not always easy, but in the end, friendship prevails. And it was a very, very good show. It makes you curious and wonder how it flopped initially on Broadway. When this came out, guys, it hardly even had a Broadway run. It flopped so fast. It just has to do with the cast, I feel like. This cast fits this show. It feels like this show was written for this specific cast. It was amazing, amazing. I'm not going to tell you to run and go see it, because I know those ticket prices are unrealistic. But if you have the opportunity to see it, I would really highly recommend it. It's kind of a stripped back musical. It's not as intense and awe-inspiring as Sweeney Todd, but even so, it is good. I said to my sister that Sweeney Todd is a musical that feels like a real musical, to quote Harry Styles. You know, he said that about Don't Worry, Darling, a movie that feels like a real movie. That is how Sweeney Todd feels, for sure. But Merrily We Roll Along is also a musical that feels like a real musical, because it's got that old sound, classic orchestrations, and it's a very, very interesting story, and you really, really fall in love with these three friends. And not to mention, they're just the cutest. When they did their bows at the end, you could just tell they have such a good relationship. And I was so happy that I got to see all of the original cast. Like, none of them were out. They were all there. I know sometimes they're in and they're out, but we were really, really lucky to get to see Lindsay, Jonathan, and Daniel. But, however, where we were a little bit unlucky was that they did not stage door. None of them. So we did not see any of them. But I did get a good tip, guys. For the stage door, if you're wanting to go and see Merrily We Roll Along and get Daniel, Jonathan, or Lindsay's autographs, the stage door is on 45th Street. So it's around the side of the theater. It's on the other side. And it's in front of the Museum of Broadway, to give you some perspective. One of the ushers or the security guards, they told us that they typically stage door and sign on Wednesday nights, not the Wednesday matinee, and Saturdays. So Saturday nights, to be specific. So if you want to get them to sign, they're kind of supposed to do that on Wednesday night or Saturday night. Otherwise, I think it's kind of more so up to them whether they will or if they won't. But unfortunately, we saw it on a Saturday night, but it was the day that we got, 7 inches of snow. So it was freezing. And so none of them came out. But we did wait at that stage door for a really long time with a lot of other people. A lot of people stayed and waited, even though people were telling us left and right, Daniel's already left. They're not coming out. Everybody waited anyways, but yeah, we didn't see any of them. So, guys, oh my gosh, I think that wraps up our recap. Sweeney, Merrily, was there anything else I needed to tell you guys? Okay. Let's get into our Broadway grosses, which accounts for the Notebook previews, but only barely, and Aaron Tveit and Sutton Foster joining Sweeney, and I can't think of anything else. And then we get to talk about the Wicked trailer! Ah, okay, let's get into our Broadway grosses. Okay, guys, we have a new number one that we're not used to seeing. Hamilton has beat out The Lion King for the number one spot in the Broadway grosses at $1.5 million. Right below them is The Lion King at number two. Third is Merrily We Roll Along. And now I can see why. Freaking incredible. Wicked is fourth, and Sweeney Todd reclaims their spot with Aaron Tveit and Sutton Foster at number five. They're back at it, baby. Will they be able to maintain it with these coming weeks? Or is it going to kind of simmer down and die out with, you know, people getting used to them in these roles? Is it just a huge fad right now? I don't know. We'll see. I think it might die down just a bit. But this is a huge jump from where it was previously with the understudies on. So congratulations, Sweeney Todd, at number five. Moulin Rouge is number six. Whoa. With Derek Kalina back and Boy George in the role. Number six. I don't know the last time I saw Moulin Rouge at number six. MJ is number seven, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child is eight, Aladdin is nine, and Anne Juliet is 10. Let's find out what's just below those. We have Back to the Future, Chicago with Ariana Madix, who, by the way, just extended their Broadway run by a little bit. And then we have How to Dance in Ohio right below that. Okay, clap, 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 clap. Also, we want to note Hadestown is right below that with Jordan Fisher and Lola Tung in the roles and another girl who's a singer that I can't remember right now. So that is our Broadway grosses for this week. Oh, and by the way, The Notebook is at the bottom because they only had three preview performances this week. So next week we will figure out how they rank. And I think they're going to rank really, really well because I heard that their rush line was long. So I'm excited to see next week where it falls in the Broadway grosses. Okay, my friends, it is time for the Broadway news, and we are going to talk about the Wicked trailer. Thank goodness. Okay, let's chat. So, close my laptop so you have my undivided attention. So, we are watching the Super Bowl, right? I'm sure we were all sitting in the same place when we saw that black hat, that witch's hat that would look great on someone smart like you. With the steam billowing out. Can you tell I've watched it quite a few times? And we all held our breath and we knew what was happening. And then we saw Elphaba's green hand touch a yellow brick. And we thought, this is not happening in a Super Bowl commercial. Do they know their demographic? We're not watching the Super Bowl. Well, luckily we were. And then the trailer begins. Holy cow. I'm still too stunned to speak. Okay, so I went frame by frame, y'all, of this trailer to figure out what scenes they're portraying when, what songs we're probably getting, and everything else. I think maybe a track list is like circling the stratosphere right now, but I haven't seen like an official track list, so I'm not getting my hopes up. Let's talk trailer. First, Cynthia Erivo looked unreal as Elphaba. Can we just say that one scene when Glinda says, "You're green," and Cynthia says, "I am"? Cynthia, the glasses, the green makeup, the nice dress looked amazing, which is a little different than how Elphaba starts out in the musical. She's looking a little dorky and not Glindified yet. But no, Elphaba looks stunning. She doesn't even need a makeover. She looks so good. Her hair in that pretty braid. I love it. Ariana, I'm a little hesitant on still, but I digress. The costumes look amazing. I'm really excited about those. The flying monkeys in the trailer don't look quite as scary or not nearly as scary and jarring as they do in the stage production. I love the flying monkeys in the stage production, but they are what nightmares are made of. And in the music or in the movie, they have like blue wings. They look really elegant and really cool. We got to see a lot of the characters. We saw Bo and Yang. We saw Madame Morrible. We saw Jeff Goldblum. We did not see Ethan Slater as Bach, which is interesting to note. And we also did not see Dr. Dillamond. And there's no Dr. Dillamond noted in the cast. There is, however, Keala Settle, who is playing a new character called Miss Caudle, C-O-D-D-L-E. This is a new character to the show, which means that they are introducing new characters. Does this mean that they're introducing new plot lines and storylines? Is there going to be a professor turning into a goat and losing his ability to speak? Is that going to be a thing? We didn't see anything in the trailer about that aspect of the story. So I wouldn't be surprised if they would change that up a little bit for the movie. It's an interesting part of the plot that Elphaba, but it's also like a very important part to the plot that she's, and it speaks to her connection with the flying monkeys and everything and how Oz is turning corrupt, you know, because they're taking away the human animal rights. Anyway, so I think that maybe they're playing around with that storyline right now, or maybe they're still working it out since we didn't get to see any of it in the trailer. I loved that bullet train that we got to see. I thought that was really, really beautiful. I thought Shiz University looked really beautiful. I liked the fact that it was kind of like in the middle of all of these moats and rivers and oceans and on this cliff's edge. I thought that looked really scenic and beautiful and very different from the movie musical. Gosh, sorry, I keep getting mixed up. Different from the musical because the musical, Glinda just arrives sitting on a pile of her luggage. Ah, here she is. But in the movie, she's coming in on a gondola with her big piles of pink luggage behind her. So the budget is pretty high, you can tell. But I like it visually. I think it looks really amazing. I think they're staying true to the musical set. It is looking somewhat steampunk. I thought when they initially released those two pictures, the one of Elphaba or of Glinda running up the stairs, and I think it was like Elphaba getting her broom or something, they looked very steampunk and dark and very similar to the musical set. The trailer looks like a little bit like a step away from that, a little more fantasy-like, but still really, really beautiful, and also a little more similar to the Wizard of Oz set a little bit, a little more reminiscent of that than the musical set is, I would say, what with the fields of poppies. I was surprised, however, guys. So let's talk about the timeline of this. So we know that we're going to get Dancing Through Life in the first part because we see her at the dance with the hat on in the trailer. People are presuming that the second act is going to start with Thank Goodness and the first part is going to end with Defying Gravity, similarly to the musical. So then why did they show the Wizard of Oz characters? Just for people to be able to identify what this story is based off of? I don't really understand why they showed, because they do. They showed Dorothy and the Lion and the Tin Man and the Scarecrow in front of the Wizard. So why are they showing that in part one? That doesn't line up with the musical. That's one of my questions. My other big question is about Dr. Dillamond. Those are the two big takeaways of like, question mark, where are we going with this? Other than that, I thought the trailer looked beautiful. It looks like we're getting a fantastic movie, and I'm ready to see more. I might think of some more things as we go on, but I think that's all I have to say about the Wicked trailer. I'm so happy we got something. It is coming out on Thanksgiving, guys, so it's going to be a hot minute. So maybe we'll get a track list. Maybe we'll get a song. Oh my God, we have to talk about the song. I'm so sorry. I'm literally so sorry. I didn't hit one of those notes. Oh my God. Okay, we have to talk about that though. Cynthia Erivo's opt out of this world. Not even an opt up. I loved that. I have that stuck in my head. It's burned in my brain. It was beautiful. It was so amazing, amazing. I loved that, I'm not going to sing it again, but that's that beautiful end of Defying Gravity that they already put in the trailer. It's wise for them to put it in the trailer because it is so identifiable. If you don't know Wicked, you likely know that riff. However, like, now we already know what Cynthia's riff is going to sound like, which is kind of a huge part, to me at least, of the musical. For me, when I would listen to the CD growing up, I would always tell everybody in the car, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet. And then I would turn up that part. And so for them to release that in the trailer is kind of crazy. Okay, now let's talk about the movie poster. I really, really like it. I feel like that's really all I have to say. It's creative, it's simple, it's nice, it's pretty. It's Wicked! Yeah, I guess I don't really have much to say about the movie poster, but I really like the costumes in it. I did say this on my Instagram story, if you follow me on Instagram, at From the Mezzanine, that I don't love Elphaba's dress nearly as much as I love her dress in the musical. On the show poster, it's just very dark and, I don't know, just not really as beautiful and elegant. And just, I love Elphaba's black dress with all of the fabric lining it in different colors, but it all is dark and really beautiful. I love that dress in the musical, so I don't love it as much in the movie, what she has on, but I really do like Glinda's pink dress that we saw her get in the bubble in the pink dress in the trailer, so I assume that is her bubble dress. So we're not getting a blue bubble dress, it looks like. We're getting a pink one, which is cool because it was originally pink, actually, whenever it was doing its off-Broadway tryout. Isn't it crazy to think about the fact that Wicked had an off-Broadway tryout, by the way? Like, that's just crazy to me. Like, it just, you never think about a smaller scale production of Wicked. It's just Wicked. This big, masterful thing. So yeah, that's really all I have to say about the show poster and the Wicked trailer getting released. But I just love that we got something. Any morsel of Wicked movie I can get, I latch onto, and I love it. And I'm so excited to see what we get next. So excited. Okay, let's move on to our next news story. So, another piece of movie musical news story. We got word this week that there may be a Tangled musical in development. So, Disney Theatrical Group, which puts on The Lion King, Hercules, Aladdin, they are working on Tangled, possibly for a Broadway stage. So, this was announced this past week in The Hollywood Reporter that a development workshop is underway and it has been confirmed. So we know it is happening and this will be a stage version based on the 2010 film Tangled with Rapunzel and Flynn Rider. And I think that's a great idea. I did do some poking around to see what else was out there and there's actually already a stage production that Disney does for their Disney Cruise Line and the entire thing is online. You can watch the musical from start to finish. I watched probably the first like 5 minutes or so, and it even has some additional songs that weren't in the movie that Alan Menken wrote. So it has already been creatively transformed into a stage production. So it should be a pretty easy transition into a Broadway production. We know that they most recently did try to do Hercules, which played off Broadway, and then we got Radio Silence. I thought it looked pretty good. I don't think it got the best reviews, but I thought Hercules would be a cool idea for a stage production. But I think Tangled is honestly an even better idea. What fun they can do with the hair. I love that. And the magic of the glowing hair and cutting it. I think it's a good idea. I really do. And I'm not partial to these Disney productions at all. I've never seen Aladdin. I've never seen The Lion King. And frankly, I don't really care to. But Tangled, It's a little more relevant. A lot of us really went through a Tangled phase, really, really loved it. It's a beautiful scenic story that I think that they could have a lot of fun with. Plus, like, the pub scene, they talk about dreams, but I can only think of, I eat dreams, I eat them too. I have a dream, and I'm so cruel and vicious as I seem. Yeah, y'all know what I'm talking about. I just think that they could have a lot of fun with it, with the tower. Could be really, really interesting. You could reuse the tower from Into the Woods that Rapunzel had and just, you know, use it in this. Anyways, this was like kind of a shock. We never heard anything about this happening previously. So now that we know this is in development, we will keep an eye out for it and see what comes of it in these next few months, years. Who knows? But maybe we'll hear more about Tangled sometime soon. Okay, and to round out our very, very exciting week in Broadway news and stories and my fun week of Broadway shows, let's end it on a very quick little news story about Appropriate on Broadway and the exciting news that it is extending their run and transferring from the second stage to Broadway, baby! You'll love to see it. So, Appropriate, y'all know this show. Let me just name you this cast that it has. Sarah Paulson, Corey Stoll, Michael Esper, Natalie Gold, Graham Campbell, and currently on Broadway with Elle Fanning. However, once it transfers to Broadway, the big news of the story is that Elle Fanning probably has a previous engagement and cannot join the cast. She's a pretty big deal. I really like her acting, so it's sad that she can't join the cast on Broadway, but they will be recasting it, and who knows who it could be. So this is playing at the second stage at the Hayes Theater, and it was an already extended production to March 3rd. But now we got word that it is transferring to the Belasco Theater, where unfortunately Had a Dance in Ohio recently closed at. And so now they have an opening. So here comes Appropriate to fill the void over at the Belasco Theater. So it is going to be a 13-week engagement, super duper short, and it will begin performances March 25th. With a limited run to continue through June 23rd. And like I said, Elle Fanning is the only role that they are replacing. Other than that, the entire cast is moving from the second stage over to the Belasco. Very exciting. And if I don't see it at the second stage, I definitely want to be seeing it at the Belasco because I'm interested in this show. Let's read a little bit about what this show is about. I know we've talked about it before, but in case you forgot, to quote the Playbill article, the plot is, quote, "The work centers on a white family who, while closing out the estate of their late father, discover some disturbing artifacts that force them to confront their family's past." So it's an intriguing story that I definitely want to see, and I'm glad that there's another play on Broadway. And it seems to be a really good play. If you're itching for a good play to go and see, I would recommend Appropriate. That wraps up this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Go find me on social media. I'm on Instagram and TikTok at From the Mezzanine. You can also find my entire podcast episodes along with some vlogs and fun things on my YouTube channel at From the Mezzanine Broadway. Leave me a rate and review wherever you are listening today. Guys, I noticed y'all are reviewing on Apple Podcasts. You have no idea how much that does for this show. So if you've been listening to this show for a while, please take just a quick second and leave me a rate or review wherever you are listening, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music. Oh, Lord, it's everywhere, everywhere, wherever you're listening. Please leave me a review. It does such incredible things. And while you're at it, guys, share this episode with your Broadway bestie because I am sure they're going to enjoy it just as much as you do. Thank you once again for listening, and I will see you next Tuesday. Bye.